want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We are back again. It's the Hour of Power. It's the time that you patriots and jackbooted thugs alike gather around the internet. It's the TNT Radio Show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters Radio Network. Today is Thursday, October the 24th, believe it or not. The weather is getting cold outside, and we're trying to keep from falling under the weather, so we'll see if our voice can hold up today. But again, we'll start out, as always, with This Week in History. That's where we'll start out on tonight's show. And we'll go back to this week, 1942. It was the temporary victory tax imposed. Maybe you've heard about these government taxes and regulations that are temporary, when we know there's no such thing as a temporary tax or a temporary regulation. But this is what went down in 1942. If you can imagine the difference between then and 71 years later, this is a quote-unquote temporary victory tax imposed on income over $624. And that was a lot of money in 1942. Go back a little further. This week in 1879 was the invention of the Edison lamp. And finally, if you really want to get down to the brass tacks, you go back to today, this date, in 1945, and people say, well, what the hell is the big deal about this date in 1945? And I'll tell you what, 1945 on this date was what we call the Day of Shame, because that was when the United States approved the United Nations Charter. The United Nations Charter approved on this date, believe it or not, 68 years ago today. Again, it was a ringing declaration indicating that America's quote-unquote pre-World War II isolation, as they called it, was at an end. The United States Senate approved the charter establishing the United Nations on this date in 1945. But all went back to the evil Woodrow Wilson, who, following the close of World War I, brought about the League of Nations. League of Nations just wasn't as big and powerful as the United Nations. He had a lot of post-war independence, some would call it isolationism, that killed U.S. participation in the League of Nations. But yet in 1945, with World War II coming to a close, the U.S. Senate indicated the change in American attitudes towards our involvement in world affairs by approving the United Nations Charter, you ready for this, by a vote of 89-2. So if anybody thinks that we need to go back, and if we went back 68 years, things would be a lot better off. Even back then, the United States Senate was dead wrong, because they voted for the UN treaty by a vote of 89-2. Of course, Harry Truman was delighted with that vote. He said that the action of the Senate advances the cause of world peace. And Acting Secretary Joseph Grew also applauded, saying millions of men, women, and children have died because nations took the naked sword instead of the conference table to settle their differences, because he was either naive enough or thought that you were stupid enough to believe that somehow a world government was going to keep people from dying in war. And the United Nations did not become a foundation or a cornerstone of world peace in the years to follow. That's not even that debatable. A lot of people will say that that's what happened, but that's not what happened. Again, the United Nations Charter approved on this date in 1945. So moving on, if you want to talk about nations and their being united, what about the fact that moved back up to today, away from history and back to current day news? What about the fact that we have the NSA monitoring the calls of 35 world leaders? NSA monitored calls of 35 world leaders after U.S. officials hand over contacts. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine just the audacity of that? And I'm not saying other countries don't do it, but again, we're supposed to be Americans, and we're supposed to be better than that, right? A confidential memo reveals that the NSA encouraged senior officials in its quote-unquote customer departments, such as the White House, House and the State, and the Pentagon, to share their Rolodexes, quote-unquote, so the agencies could add the phone numbers of leading foreign politicians to their surveillance state, to their police state, if you will. The document noted that one unnamed U.S. official handed over 200 phone numbers, including those of 35 world leaders, none of whom is named, surprise, surprise. But we heard that included the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel. Yesterday, she accused the United States of tapping her mobile phone. Well, now you know how the rest of us feel, Ms. Merkel, but the difference is she's not an American. So she's really got to be pissed off if you guys aren't. And after Merkel's allegations became public, the White House Press Secretary, Jay Carney, that guy, the most worthless piece of crap there is, Jay Carney, should call him Carnival Carney, issued a statement that said the U.S. is not monitoring and will not monitor the German Chancellor's communications. So he's telling us there's nothing to see here, that we would never, ever monitor or drop a bug on foreign countries' leaders.
What a maroon. What an ignoramus.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel as well, Bugs. Because the NSA memo obtained by The Guardian suggests that such surveillance of Angela Merkel was not isolated. The agency routinely monitors the phone numbers of world leaders and even asks for the assistance of other U.S. officials to do so. The document continues by saying the new phone numbers had helped the agency discover still more contact details to add to their monitoring. These numbers have provided leak information to other numbers that subsequently have been tasked. So they're monitoring, they're spying, they're monitoring, and it keeps going on and on and on. This is the government of secrecy and fear that they want to have on you. This is what happens when they are monitoring world leaders' conversations. And again, I try to avoid this whole left-right paradigm thing, but if the world was laughing at George W. Bush, what are they doing with Barack Obama? I would say they're laughing at him, but they got to be pissed off about his folks monitoring their conversations. Wouldn't this piss them off a little bit? I think it would. Merkel was pretty pissed off, and she had the right to be. The Guardian, of course, approached the Obama administration for comment on these documents. And guess what? Officials declined to respond to the new material, instead referring to comments delivered by old Carnival Carney at Thursday's daily briefing. Carney told the reporters, "The NSA revelations have clearly caused tension in our relationships with other countries, and we are dealing with that through diplomatic channels." No, wait a minute. He just said a few minutes ago that we're not doing this. We're not doing any monitoring. But today's press release says that it's caused tension in our relationships. So old Carnival Carney can't have it both ways, can he? Carney goes on to say these are very important relations, both economically and for our security, and we will work to maintain the closest possible ties. But the public accusation of spying on Merkel adds to mounting political tensions in Europe about the scope of U.S. surveillance on the government of its allies. Now, folks, we know that we're droning people, killing people, using drones domestically and abroad to kill people. We know that we're listening in on our phones all the time. And now they're listening in on foreign leaders' phones as well. So again, at the daily briefing today, Carnival Carney again refused to answer questions about spying on Merkel's calls. And the NSA memo, lest you think this is all about President Obama, lest you think that Bush gets a pass, the NSA memo seen by The Guardian was written halfway through George W. Bush's second term, when the Secretary of State was Condoleezza Rice and the Defense Secretary was Donald Rumsfeld. Chancellor Merkel, according to Reuters, suspected the surveillance after finding her mobile phone number written on a U.S. document. Now imagine if our president, dear leader Obama, saw his phone number, his mobile phone number, written on a German document. And she told the president that the German government is a close ally and partner of the U.S. expects a future clear contractual basis for the activity of the services and their cooperation. The leader of Germany's Green Party, Katrin Göring-Eckardt, called the alleged spying an unprecedented breach of trust between the two countries. And you might say, who cares what the Green Party says? Well, in other countries, parties other than Democrats and Republicans have a say-so on matters. It's not a two-sided uniparty in those countries. They let other countries play along. So now you got the NSA becoming the Gestapo of the dear Obama administration. But like I said, you did notice that paragraph about George W. Bush, right? The point being that NSA activities are not exclusive to Obama, except that he is the nominal head of the executive branch at present time. What the NSA is doing and has been doing has been going on for a very, very long time, and it needs to stop. Mass surveillance of the world's people is grotesque and immoral. That has been going on for a long time is irrelevant. This is the argument all of us have been going on for a long time. That doesn't make it right. Human slavery had been around since the dawn of man, and it's still present to one degree or another all over the globe. But it doesn't make it any less morally repugnant. So again, you have to wonder, is this ignorance or apathy? Is it that the White House doesn't really know what NSA is doing, and they're like a bunch of high schoolers on a road trip, and there's no adult supervision? Or is this apathy? They just don't care. The NSA has become the largest blackmail machine in the world. Which is it? I don't know. I'm asking you. Boy, oh boy. The world news is overwhelming, folks. The next international story we bring you, don't know a subtle segue here from Germany being spied on. Except for now we get into the real reason for Saudi Arabia's shift away from the United States. Remember how Saudi Arabia was supposed to be one of our best allies? Remember how most of the bombers on 9/11, allegedly, were from Saudi Arabia? But we still had George W. Bush over there holding hands, literally, not figuratively, just literally, folks, with the Saudi princes. Well, from the Washington's blog, I bring you the story tonight about the real reason for Saudi Arabia's shift away. The real reason, China has just dethroned the United States of America as the world's largest consumer of foreign oil. That's right, China now imports 6.3 million barrels of oil per day compared to the United States, 6.24 million barrels of oil a day. And that trend is likely to continue, and the gap is likely to grow, according to the EIA's October short-term energy outlook. Wood Mackenzie, a leading global energy consultancy, echoed this prediction. Wood Mackenzie says that they estimate Chinese oil imports will rise to 9.2 million barrels a day, which will be 70% of total demand within the next 7 years. So forget Syria, Iran, Iraq, Bahrain. Forget all those folks. The stated reasons for the Saudi shift, those are all real, but the much bigger driver is oil. Indeed, most geopolitical policy is based upon oil. And part of why this is a problem is the country's reluctance to pursue any kind of non-fossil fuel technologies, which could put the oil industry out of business altogether. Now, I'm kind of torn on this because on one hand, we talk about energy here in our country, and we talk about home heating, which is coming up now with the winter time arriving, and the coal industry. And we know on one hand what Barack Obama, the candidate, and Barack Obama, the president, has said about the coal industry. He wants to bankrupt it. So that hasn't changed. It's one of the few things he's kept his word about. But the question is, why do they want to be so dependent upon oil? I mean, China's oil consumption exceeding ours, that's not a big surprise. Anybody could have seen this coming. But also, here's another news flash for you. Oil companies exploit every opportunity they can to make a buck. Why do we want to do this? I give credit to our good friend Thomas Massey, congressman of our neighboring congressional district, the 4th District of Kentucky. If only I were 5 miles east of here, I could be in this district. Congressman Massey drives a Tesla electric car, but he also has a bumper sticker on it that says Friends of Coal. No, he's not trying to have it both ways. He's not a hypocrite. He's trying to be fair and balanced, if we were to use that term that Rupert Murdoch's less than conservative group calls themselves. Oil aside, since we have an abundance of oil and gas in other deep wells, if we realize there is little danger, not no danger, but little danger in drilling these wells, then we need to focus in some way on the fact that this ridiculous administration is alienating us from all the world's leaders. We just saw that with the way they tap their phones, with the way they drone people, with the way that they empire build. Please keep in mind, almost all the businesses that you work for, deal or work with in some way, or compete with all these foreign countries in interest. Yeah, we can't help but remain a marketplace. I don't mind being a global marketplace. I just don't want to be a global policeman. And leaders of the quote-unquote free world, here's our plea. Don't penalize those of us who understand business. We need jobs for our citizens, even if it is work overseas. And you know that we have technologies that they desire. So please understand, we don't like this leadership, okay? Please remember, folks, everybody in this country doesn't like our leadership. And that's why I try to explain to you when we go empire building around the world, because a lot of those people that we bomb, I'm using that collective we now. I'm sorry, I'll try to refrain. A lot of the countries and private citizens that the United States government bombs don't like their government either. We are very much against our government leaders. Not just at this time, but for most of the recent history of this country. and we have plenty of internal issues. When we found out recently that 49% of the country now get some sort of government assistance. It really is what Ayn Rand said in Atlas Shrugged, a collection of the makers versus the takers. You're listening to the TNT radio show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. As we go to the bottom of the hour, if you want to get in on the second part of the show, call us up, 858-683-1326. 858-683-1326. We opened up the show tonight with Iron Maiden playing Longest Day, and then we'll go into a musical break at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back.
Right now, for unconstitutional. Understand right now, what you guys are doing here today will play a effect on history. We are tired of these private Federal Reserve bankers who are running this country and destroying this country from the inside. The tyranny that they committed against you and your family as well. You want to stand here as Americans because we know our founding fathers died for this very right.
I declare this to be an unlawful assembly. I order all those assembled to immediately disperse. You must.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we went into the break with a little bit of Sons of Liberty, Don't Tread on Me, in our bottom of the hour bill paying, if you will, there. Had to ring the cash register. And now for something completely different. What about giving your loved one a proper burial, no matter what the government says? New York Times actually picked up on this story from Stevenson, Alabama, of all places. And we have a story about James Davis, who probably knew that his first mistake was asking the government permission. That's the biggest mistake we make, is asking the government permission to do stuff, which is none of their damn business. But ever since Mr. Davis granted his dying wife's wish to lay her to rest just outside the front porch, he and the Stevenson, Alabama government have been at odds from City Hall to the courts. The government of this little railroad town in Appalachia down in Alabama has tried to convince Mr. Davis that a person who lives in their town can't just set up a cemetery anywhere that they like. He didn't ask permission from the government. Well, he did, but Mr. Davis is not inclined to back down. They're waiting on me to die, he said early last week, standing on the porch of the log house he built. See, he built this house. He wasn't out there getting a loan from the international banksters to own a house. He built this log cabin himself. And he looked out over his lawn, which along with the grave of his wife, features an outhouse and a large sign demanding that his wife be allowed to rest in peace. I am not digging her up, he said. Now, Alabama, like most states, has no state law against burying somebody on private property. Here comes the but. But Sherry Bradley, the Deputy Director of Environmental Services for State Department of Public Health, says people are always asking her about private burials. You wouldn't believe the calls I get, she said, mentioning one woman who wanted to stage a Viking burial by putting her deceased husband into a boat and setting it on fire. And the government's answer to that one was, no, you can't do that. But what if it was a proper Viking burial? Who is the government of a state or a city to come along and tell us where we can bury our beloved after they pass away? Well, guess what? There are no state laws, but Stevenson, Alabama has a city ordinance. And people don't usually ask to be buried within the city limits. The director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance has said, this is a nonprofit watchdog group, the Funeral Consumers Alliance. Mr. Davis and his wife grew up in Dayton, Tennessee, and they met when they were in elementary school. And then they dated, and they were together for 48 years and had 5 children. But Mrs. Davis became very ill, and Mr. Davis retired from his job as an electrical worker to take care of her. She died 4 years ago, and ever since he has slept in his easy chair, finding the bedroom depressing. And shortly before her death, she expressed her wish to be buried in the yard of their house where they had spent 3 decades together. Now, we're not asking if the story's creepy. The story might creep you out. Although there's a lot of more creepy things that people do in their homes that are also none of my business. But Mr. Davis maybe made the first mistake by getting permission. You see, he went to the government, the city council. He went to the county health department. And he wanted a permit from the health department and or city council. Well, the council told him he had not completed the paperwork, and after 2 meetings, they voted to deny his request, speaking about its potential impact on lowering property values and who would take care of it in perpetuity. And the city attorney, Parker Edmiston, said he was concerned about setting a precedent so the government wouldn't let them be buried in their own yard. We're going to go to the phone lines. I believe our good friend Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes is on the line. Paul, what say you?
I love these stories about government deciding that they need to dictate every detail in our lives, both collectively and individually. This Stevenson, Alabama is in the northeast corner. It's actually kind of in the Appalachian Mountains of Alabama. It's in the Decatur and Huntsville metropolitan statistical area, and I actually have some firsthand knowledge of that area. That's a pretty rural area by and large.
Yep.
That's pretty rural. And these folks are not big city folks. In fact, the town of Stevenson has less than 1,700 people. And it only covers 5 square miles. The photo in the Wikipedia entry shows it's historic district, which essentially means that it doesn't have much business in its downtown sector. That's what it means. Anytime, mm-hmm. and that's kind of common for a lot of small towns, that the businesses just can't survive. They can't thrive in a town that small. So, you know, the city folks say, well, what are we going to do with all these buildings?
Paul, did Mr. Davis make the first mistake by looking for permission from the government? Should he have just gotten his backhoe and went ahead?
Absolutely. And Dale, I would encourage, and I think most of your listeners don't make that kind of mistake, but I will tell you that the fear factor of our government, the fact that our society in this country fears our government, will prompt a lot of people to go ahead and try to get the government's permission in advance to do stuff. And yet the people who are in charge of government at the very highest levels, they decide that they're going to go do what they want to do, and then if they get caught, then they will ask for forgiveness and everything will be okay. And so I actually think that is a better strategy when you're dealing with governments and bureaucracies, that ask for forgiveness rather than ask for permission, because these damn bureaucrats, once you turn them on as a bureaucrat, they will become a full-fledged automatron bureaucrat. They'll throw every rule and regulation at you that they can muster. And that doesn't really matter whether
rules.
They like you or not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and there are too many rules and regulations, Paul. I mean, I've promoted the guy's book many a times. There's a book out there called Three Felonies a Day, and it talks about all the rules that we break because you would need a lifetime. You would need several lifetimes to read all the laws. The lawyers don't know all the laws, but they're in the books, so if they want to look them up, you have to research them. When your laws are so large and so condensed, I mean, in huge books, they're not condensed, but they're very deep, and you have to go looking them up like a reference book, then you have too many laws. And he did go out there and bury his wife out there, and again, that was probably his first mistake. He went for their permission first, and they didn't grant it. So they're probably going to give him more crap now than if he had just done it on his own, I guess, because they kind of told him not to do it. So he went out there and did it.
Well, Dale, the story, as I read it, the story actually suggested that in the early stages of him seeking permission, the city mm-hmm. folks basically said, well, you need to file some papers, and which kind of implies that they believed it was okay, kind of bolstering your point that there are so many laws that even the bureaucrats don't even know what they are. They don't even know.
If you call up one of these bureaucrats, look here. I mean, even the city, I mean, like you said, a city that small, you would think there shouldn't be as many laws. So imagine once we get into a city the size of Louisville, Kentucky, where we do the show, and you call up one of these city officials, they got to call their lawyer. They got to call their lawyer's lawyer. They'll get back to you. They don't know the rules, so you call them up getting a clarification or trying to get a legal advice on something or at least wondering what the law is, and they don't know. So you are correct that a lot of people told him, oh, you got to jump through this hoop and that hoop, and he tried to do it. He tried to play ball with them, play by their rules that they invented that he never really agreed to. He never signed off on their rules, and he waged this legal fight for 4 years. Now, what's funny is at one point he was so pissed off he even ran for mayor of the town, but he lost. That would have been funny if he'd been elected mayor of the town. He'd have the mayor's deceased wife there burying his property. But last year, a circuit court judge finally found in favor of the city and ordered Mr. Davis to move his wife's remains to a, quote, properly licensed and approved cemetery. There's that license again. Even after you die, Paul, you got to have a license for something. The grave remained undisturbed as the case has been making it through its appeals process. And his neighbors, though admitting it's a little weird, have gotten used to it. And that's the way it works. Just as people get into the Stockholm Syndrome where they get used to big government, if we get used to doing things without government permission, people will become accustomed to that too, won't they?
Well, without question, Dale. I mean, my God. When this country was established, there wasn't any formal government, and
nope.
You know, we had a whole bunch of people that managed to survive. They even got along
well,
with people who didn't look like them or talk like them. They called, so it's amazing what the human species is capable of when they don't have the benefit of government sticking their nose into everything that they do.
Well, what's funny is this story has gotten so much attention that it says, the story finally, like I said, finally made it to the New York Times and some other liberty groups that were opining about it. And now Mr. Davis has actually been approached by some folks, God forbid, in Hollywood who might want to do a story about his saga, which I think would be a great movie. But again, over the weekend, after his denial at the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, that's when he finally made national news here. And he was back in court over the weekend where he warned of an incident. So here we go. He warned that there would be an incident if the city came to his property. So good for him. I mean, I'm sure that makes him a terrorist in their eyes, but he warned that there would be an incident if the county came or the city came onto his property. And he even suggested a compromise, which again, that's, you know, him compromising is more than Mitch McConnell did, because Mitch McConnell was just Harry Reid's very expensive whore, as I've been calling him. So at least Mr. Davis tried to compromise, and he said that he would dig out the coffin and even cremate her remains. But a lot of time has passed then, so I don't know if that would be the most wise thing. But he acknowledged I'm sorry, I'm trying to read the story on the fly, and the people there in the city government acknowledged that there is no law against tombstones or the placement of ashes, but again, they keep raising a lot of hell because he won't raise his wife's grave. And if the city council made this fuss, is it precedent setting? I mean, again, if they had made all this fuss and he had just done it, would they have came after him later, Paul?
It depends, Dale. In the world of politics and government, you have a whole bunch of little petty tyrants that are in charge of things.
Yeah.
And if one of them gets a bee up his butt and decides that he wants to make a particular individual an example, he'll bring the power of whatever the government happens to be down on that individual. There was a topic today on local radio which kind of ties into this. And
right.
that had to do with the concept of every citizen in the USA has or will commit at least 7 felonies. 7 felonies, okay? And so I would offer here, Dale, that every member of your audience and every member of the community in which your audience members live, every one of them have committed some type of crime. We are a nation of criminals based on all the laws that are out there. Every one of us, every one of us is a criminal in some form or fashion.
And again, it's just a matter of being subjective, whether they want to pursue it or not. If you're their buddy,
selective,
and they pat you on the back, hey, buddy, we're pals, they'll look past it.
Selective prosecution is what it is. And it's selective prosecution for two reasons. Number one, there's just too damn many laws and not enough people to prosecute those laws, which, again, makes a great case for reducing the number of laws. And then number two, the issue of fairness, it is also selectively enforced. And they use these laws as weapons. Attorneys, as far as I'm concerned, are nothing more than hitmen with a coat and tie. That's all they are. They selectively prosecute people for all sorts of reasons. Could be shakedown, could be extortion, could be revenge. But our nation was founded as a nation of laws, and unfortunately we have gotten way, way far away from the wise application of our laws, and we've got just too damn many of them.
Well, and the thing about it is we have these wars on poverty and wars on crime and wars on terrorism, and I kept saying, these wars are such failures if they wanted to do anything about things like immigration. I told Ed last week, I said, all they got to do is declare the border shut down, and then everybody will all of a sudden enforce them, because when government got shut down, they started closing things off. But again, if you look at government and you look at these wars that they have, to tie back in a couple of our favorite topics, Paul, that you and I have talked about, the war on drugs and this police state, it brings me to another wonderful story. I mean, hell, here in Kentucky, I was listening to what you were saying about too many laws, and here in Kentucky, we can't even get them to go for bringing back the hemp plants that were once very successful, because the state police and about a handful of Democratic politicians are the only ones who are holding it back. And I'm sorry, that's the only numbers I can come up with, is about a handful of local and state politicians and the state police. So to tie this in, here's a wonderful little story that I just had sent to me this week, Paul. And this story comes from out in Southern California, right? The land of fruits and nuts out there in Los Angeles County. Well, there's a little town called Little Rock, California. I don't know if you ever heard of it or not.
No, I haven't.
And in Little Rock, California, tell me if you see where this story is going. The police were going to go after this guy for meth labs. You haven't heard this story yet?
No.
The police are going after a man for meth labs. Oh, I left out the fact that the man they're going after was 80 years old and a retired Lockheed Martin engineer, Paul. He was in with their big government industrial complex, and he still couldn't escape their wrath. So the police were going to go after this retired Lockheed engineer who's 80 years old over meth lab suspicions. So, they have this penchant for smelling things that really aren't there. That's why they tell you to roll your car window all the way down at a traffic stop when you should just leave it cracked enough so you can hear them and he can hear you, but that's another story. So they burst into this guy's house back this summer in this small little town in Los Angeles County, unannounced, to uncover a meth operation that they surely knew was going on there. What do you think happened, Paul?
Somewhere along the way, they confiscated his house.
I wish they were that nice. I wish they were that polite. They went They went into this 80-year-old retired engineer's house late night in June of this year, and they shot and killed the 80-year-old man over meth suspicions.
Well, those 80-year-old folks,
they're serving protect you, Paul.
They are 80-year-olds are certainly a threat to the police, particularly when the police break in under cover of darkness, when the man probably was asleep, and all he heard was a noise. Dale, this sounds to me like they were looking to provoke this man, and then justify the homicide that they performed, justify that as self-defense, because the police agencies in this country definitely use that tactic a lot. They provoke suspect.
What would you do, Paul, if a bunch of masked men came unannounced into your home in the middle of the night?
if I had a firearm of any type, I'm shooting first and asking questions later.
He was asleep. This 80-year-old retired Lockheed Martin engineer, Eugene Mallory, was asleep. He heard the break-in, and before he could get to his weapon, police had shot him 6 times.
Oh, well, that was cold-blooded murder. That was a hot.
But they were looking for meth, Paul, so it's okay. The war on drugs. Don't you want to fight this war on drugs and get rid of drugs?
I'd rather fight the war on the injustice system and corruption that we have in our government. That's the war I would prefer fighting, because I think once that gets resolved,
most of these other so-called
wars will fix themselves.
Yeah, here's a little side note. They found no meth. There was no meth lab. They were wrong. They had the wrong house.
I mean,
and this is the police stuff, and then you have people out there telling me that I don't understand what it's like to be a police officer. I've never ridden with a police officer, which when they accuse me of that crap, it's BS. I have family in law enforcement. I've had these battles, these pissing matches out on the social networks with former police officers who are big and bad and tough, and they tell me that, Dale, you're just one of those conspiracy nuts, and you don't understand what police officers have to go through. Well, I understand you shouldn't go into an 80-year-old man's house and shoot him 6 times over meth that he didn't have.
Well, the police, if you want to think of the police as good people, then the police need to turn in the bad actors in their midst. Otherwise, they're nothing more than a union, and we know how unions and union thugs behave. So these guys are union thugs with badges and police powers, which makes them even more dangerous than union thugs.
Well, Mr. Mallory was 80 years old, so as you can guess, he wasn't in the best health, and his wife was there. I guess it was just she and he on the premises is what I'm understanding. And his wife explained that he had very poor eyesight, and he would not even have known that those were police officers without his glasses. And guess what? His glasses lay folded at his bedside when he was shot dead. He didn't even have time to put them on.
Well, Dale, you would think that in their training that they would be observant for such things, but apparently this particular crew of police, they had homicide on their mind. I mentioned this in a radio show not too long ago. Many of these cops go for a long time, and they don't get to shoot anybody. So when they get a situation that gets their juices flowing, and they think they're going to get to squeeze off a few rounds and kill another human being, some of these guys really get off on that. They really do.
Well, you're right. They haven't shot anybody, and they've had all this practice, and I've heard you call it the Barney Fife syndrome. That's what they are. They got that bullet. They got that trigger finger. No pun intended. It's exactly a trigger finger, And I'm glad to hear that Mr. Mallory's now widow has filed a $50 million wrongful death lawsuit. But how far is that going to get when you're suing the police department? I mean, it makes you wonder how far they're going to get. These guys must have been watching too much Breaking Bad, and they were sad that the show came to an end, I guess. But they felt justified in the end, because even though they broke into an 80-year-old man's house and shot him six times in what you and I would call cold... Huh?
The wrong house. They broke into the wrong house, had the wrong suspect, but they had their itchy trigger fingers with them, and they didn't bother to ascertain whether there was a clear and present threat.
But they felt justified in the end, threat. Paul. They felt justified in the end because guess what they found?
An unlicensed Cocker Spaniel.
No, no worse. They found that he had two guns that were not licensed in his home. He had two guns that hadn't gone through all the jumps and smokes and mirrors and hoops to get registered. He had two guns in his house.
Well, my God, they should have called in the FBI like the heck.
Yeah,
he
had two guns
Rich.
Makes you an underground drug lord. Again, too much Breaking Bad, I guess, because they thought there was a meth lab. It
goes back to the Barney Fife syndrome. And cops, any cops that I know there's a lot of people in the police agency that are probably pretty decent. They follow the rules and they use good judgment. I am exhorting those folks, the good ones, to turn the bad ones in. Turn the bad ones in. Turn them in. Get them out. Those bad apples do, in fact, spoil the whole barrel. So turn them in.
No, I agree. I agree, Paul. Unfortunately, we're coming to point up to the end of the show here, so I appreciate your contributions as always, Paul. Our final comments, folks, we'll be back right after this.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Folks, the show has flown by. We thank you once again for listening to the TNT Radio Show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters Radio Network. We've had a somber mood tonight because they're depressing stories. And if you don't think it's depressing enough already, I saw a video this week posted by Paul Joseph Watson over at InfoWars illustrating how you have a lot of Americans who are happily signing petitions to support a Nazi-style Orwellian police state. If you don't think this is shocking, I would invite you to go out on the internet, look up the YouTube video that Paul Joseph Watson has out there. Basically, what Watson did, he was working with Mark Dice on this. Mark Dice does these citizen on the street things. And Dice went out there and cited issues with how the government shutdown has imposed the inability of police to keep the community safe, and that we need to sign these petitions. Basically, it was a practical joke. But Mark Dice went out to see if he could get people to sign a petition to support, quote, a Nazi-style Orwellian police state. And he was getting a lot of people in San Diego, California, to sign up. We just want to model it after the Nazi Germany system to keep people safe and secure, Mark Dice told one individual. And the man says, not a problem, as he signed right away. They're trying to cut our budget by 20%, and we just want to make sure that we can model the police state after Nazi Germany, he tells one couple. And then they signed right away, and he said, thanks for supporting the police state. And they said, you're welcome. I mean, what does it tell you? As a practical joke, people will sign anything, but yet they agree to such authoritarianism. So is it just that they'll sign anything and they don't read it? Yes. But again, repealing the Bill of Rights? Man, we just talked about it. It's really already been done back when we had the Patriot Acts and the Detainee Security Act and H.R. 347. No wonder our country is lost. Look how stupid a lot of the people who inhabit this country are. Easily more stupid than the average German was 70 years ago. And I get the whole thing about if you bring up the Adolf Hitler reverence, you automatically lose an argument. But we're not talking about Adolf Hitler. We're just talking about the fact that people will sign something saying that you want a police state. People will sign something for a bigger government. But yet on the flip side, if you want to run for office as something other than a Republican or Democrat, you also have to stand out there and get them to sign stuff. So maybe there's hope there that people will sign anything, because the militarization of this country is not just about weapons, folks. It's about missions, tactics, and attitude. And we talk about people raiding this 80-year-old man's house over meth labs that didn't exist. These raids are distinctly military in nature. Empire building, folks, means that police departments don't want to risk losing their SWAT team and a piece of their fiefdom. Hell, if government officials are asked to pass up the chance to smash up a house, yelling threats and shooting puppies, where's the fun after all? As Paul said, they create the excitement. But we need alternatives to these things. We need alternative measures to what's becoming the police state. It's up to you to stand up when there's this kind of dispute. It's up to you to stand out in the streets and hold up signs and practice civil disobedience and maybe even do your own radio shows and maybe write your own blogs and maybe send letters to the editor. It's up to you to get out there and endorse candidates who believe in liberty. It's up to you to stand strong, don't back down, and say death to the New World Order. Have a good night, folks.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.
answers. I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.